You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A lot to get to on today's show. Arkansas basketball getting ready to play Kansas up in Providence later this week. Ethan Westerman going to join us. He's on his way there right now for the Razorback basketball game at the NCAA tournament. Christina Long going to join me in studio a little bit later. Razorback baseball in action tonight against Oral Roberts over at Baumwalker Stadium. Also, a controversial finish to the NCAA track meet over the weekend for the men's team potentially cost them a national championship. Christina talked to Chris Bucknum yesterday, and we'll get her thoughts on that as well. But we start with Ethan Westerman. He joins us from the Charlotte airport. He's finished leg one of his two-leg trip to Providence this morning. Ethan, I know you got up early to do this. How much are you looking forward to being at the NCAA tournament on Thursday?
Yeah, I really am looking forward to it. I've been to one NCAA tournament site before. It was in 2021 whenever everything was done at Indianapolis. Mm. So it was not like your normal NCAA tournament feel. So I'm really excited, to get to experience it for the first time, just what it's going to be like. I'm really curious to see just kind of if it feels so big whenever you watch a March Madness game on TV. I'm curious to see if, like, in an arena, if it's kind of like you can feel it as well, if it's kind of that same level of just, intensified everything. I know the production that they put on, with CBS and all the different stations that carry the games for March Madness. It just has that feel to it where it's special and it's cool. And I'm hoping that you can kind of like sense that in the arena too.
My first time covering the NCAA tournament was in Raleigh in 2008, and Davidson was there, and Steph Curry was playing for Davidson. And they played Gonzaga in the first round, and I think he either scored 40 in the first round and 30 in the second round, or vice versa. And, brought him back to beat Gonzaga. And then in round two, there's two games in the same site. And so game one is Georgetown against Davidson in Raleigh. But all the North Carolina fans are there waiting on their game against Arkansas that afternoon. And so all the North Carolina people are behind Davidson. And, that's 90% of the arena. And then, the Davidson people, that's probably like another 8% of the arena. So it was basically like a home game, and Steph Curry goes off. They were down by like 17, 18 points, and they come back and they win. And there is a big time feel when you're in the building for these NCAA tournament games, no doubt.
Oh yeah, I'm anticipating it. It's funny because I feel like we got, conference tournaments, say what you want about them now, like their importance or whatever, but you still kind of get just that bigger feel whenever you're in there. And it was kind of, I feel like, I don't know if Anthony mentioned this, if he's been on the show, but whenever Arkansas played South Carolina, you got that feel as far as like, Kentucky still travels for this tournament and they're packing the arena, and South Carolina, was the last place team, and Arkansas is blowing a lead to South Carolina, and John Calipari's the coach, and that arena just started to turn like pulling for South Carolina, and you could just kind of like feel like, maybe a lighter version of what it's like at these tournament sites. Mm-hmm. Whenever the lower seed starts to upset a team that's supposed to win. So I will be curious to see. I've been to this arena before. It used to be called Dunkin' Donuts or the Dunk. I'm not sure what it's called now, but it's got a different name. And it was just kind of a different feel of a basketball arena that I've ever been to. It was like a very, I don't know. It was also an NIT game, so that plays into a factor. But it didn't feel like an SEC arena at all to me. It's just kind of like that more professional feel. Which that makes sense with the NCAA tournament to have it at a place like this. So I'm anxious to see just what the environment's like, how the different fan bases travel. I'm sure St. John's, being that close, will probably have quite a few fans there. And then I'm sure Arkansas will travel and Kansas will travel. So it'll be interesting. It's the last building that Mike Anderson won a game at as coach of Arkansas. So it's just kind of there's a lot of weird Providence history with Arkansas, because I know Nolan's teams, one of Nolan's teams played there. And I think one of his last teams to make the Sweet 16.
It was the last.
The last one. So there's a lot of just little Arkansas history in Providence. So
it's
going to be cool.
It's called the Amica Mutual Pavilion now in Providence, where they're going to play this game.
I'm going to vote that the Dunk is way cooler.
Oh, for sure. I think when Arkansas played there in 96, it was called the Providence Civic Center, in the same building. They beat Penn State and Marquette back-to-back. And then, ironically, they end up losing to John Calipari's UMass team in the Sweet 16 at the Georgia Dome down in Atlanta. So Arkansas and Kansas played back in October in an exhibition game, and you were at that game. How much do you think either of these coaching staffs are looking at anything that happened that night, or do you think that that's just too unique of a setting? Like, remember, John Calipari asked Bill Self if he wouldn't play zone. I don't think he's going to be able to make that request on Thursday in an NCAA tournament game. Do you think they look at anything from that night in October? Does it matter at all to this week's game?
No. I mean, short answer, no. Two totally different teams by now. I mean, I remember at that time, Kansas is the preseason number one team in America, and clearly that hasn't panned out. Arkansas was, a highly ranked team entering the season, at least in the top 25. And that didn't pan out. But now these are two different teams that you've made it to March, and you're still – I know it's kind of cliche, but still searching for kind of like what team are you. And I think that's what this time of year is for. You really find out what you're made of. I think Arkansas's trended in the right direction as of, of course, since honestly February 1st at Kentucky, that was kind of the tipping point. Kansas, I think, is still they've had some moments, but they're still really trying to search to find out who they are. I'm anticipating, like, this is just a game that each team is you're going to see what they're actually made of. It's kind of I feel like almost like an exposing game, like which team really is not who you thought they were. But I don't think you look at that game in October. I think, was it October, maybe early November? Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I don't think you look at that really at all with this. I mean, maybe the one thing you do is the guard play. I remember Bill Self said that he thought Arkansas had three of the best guards that they'll play. Then obviously right now they're down to, they still have three, but they've been playing with two for a while of those three that he was mentioning. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. I do think that these are two totally different teams. I mean, you didn't even see Hunter Dickinson when Arkansas played Kansas earlier. Mm-hmm. So the first way you know that you can't really put too much stock in that game.
Well, in Kansas, didn't see Jonas Adu. Arkansas didn't see Rylan Griffin. There were a lot of players who were either out or limited for that game. It was October 25th, by the way. It was the second best game in Fayetteville that night. You had the Battle of the Bulldogs going across the street over at Harmon Field. That's where I was on that night. I'm interested to see this Adu Dickinson matchup because, again, neither of them played in October. I was going back and looking, though. They did meet last year or last season whenever Adu was at Tennessee and Dickinson was in his first year at Kansas. Adu didn't have a great game, and Dickinson had 17 points and 20 rebounds against Tennessee in a game out in Maui. I wonder with Adu, obviously, he's starting to kind of feel like himself again. I kind of wonder if that game might play a little bit of motivation going into this one.
Yeah, I mean, players don't forget poor performances they had, and they want to perform better. And, also I just look at this game as I think that the front line in general for Arkansas is probably looking at this as an opportunity to kind of prove themselves against a guy that, if you ask, any casual college basketball fan, who's name a big man, and Hunter Dickinson's probably the first one off most people's lips. So, it's one of those where it's a chance to go up against a guy that everybody thinks should probably have his way against you. I'm curious to see his Vonnemar and Visage, if he can, just with his height, affect Dickinson at all. That's kind of the game, I think. It's just how does Hunter Dickinson do against Arkansas? And if he's having a night, does anybody else? I think that's the key. If Dickinson gets going and then you all of a sudden look up and, their guards are starting to get involved, Juan Harris, KJ Adams, I mean, if these guys are getting involved with it, that's whenever I think you're in trouble.
Talent-wise, I don't know that Arkansas has played a whole lot of teams that are any better than Kansas. But Kansas, they haven't figured out how to play together this year. It's been a very perplexing thing watching Kansas play, and I watch quite a bit of their games. They don't seem to have any real cohesion. And from one game to the next, you just never know what you're going to get with KU. Auburn's got a talented roster. I'd say Alabama, Tennessee. But really, you get past those three teams, and just from a pure talent standpoint, and maybe KU is even more talented than one or two of them, again, there's just not a lot more talented teams. Arkansas is kind of in the same way. You know, I mean, they got a lot of players who were, you know, thought to be NBA draft prospects, whether it be this year or, you know, in a year moving forward. It's just interesting to me how these two teams kind of are mirror images in terms of there's talent there, the success hasn't really followed, and can they put it together in March?
Yeah, and you got a Hall of Fame coach leading both of them. It's just, it's crazy how, you know, it's a very full circle thing this year that they're playing each other again after opening the season. And, I mean, there's a reason Kansas was preseason number one. It is because of the talent. That's why I think there's a lot of people looking at the end of this tournament and saying that they have a high ceiling, because if it does start to click, what can they do? But I think Arkansas goes into it and kind of feeling, like you said, a mirror image, a little bit the same way of like, well, now you got Boogie Flynn back to, if anything, just relieve you a little bit. To let you know that you have another guy that you can put in if needed. I don't think he's going to have I would not anticipate him having a very big role, but maybe he will. Maybe it'll shock me. But I just think with what they have going on right now and how things are starting to click, how they did find roles because of his absence. I just think that you have two teams that really want to see their talent come through on the big stage. You know, Nellie Davis, he's been in these type of moments before. I'm anxious to see if he, you know, is his typical March Nelly. This is a fun matchup, I think. I think this is, you look at the bracket, I mean, objectively, of course, we cover Arkansas, but I think most people would circle this as one of the, if not the most intriguing first round game.
Well, and that's why I got put at 6 o'clock on CBS, is because, you know, I mean, it's got a lot of name appeal. It's got a lot of star power in this game. Ethan, I want to ask you about women's basketball. Mike Neighbors stepped down last week. Where do you think they are in terms of finding a new coach?
You know, I have the sense that they have a candidate in mind. I don't know who it is. I don't know maybe timeline of when they're looking to hire, but I get the sense that they probably have a candidate right now that's up front, and it's probably just a timing thing. I'm anxious to see, it's just the calendar issue right now as far as, like, the transfer portal opens on Monday, right? The tournament starts this week, so if you're trying to hire a coach who's coaching in the NCAA tournament, they want to be with their team and probably don't want many distractions. There's just a lot of things playing at once, but you also, if you're Arkansas, I mean, you really need to have a coach who can come in and attack the portal, I would think, if not day one that it opens, very, very early into it. So I would assume that it's a lot of timing right now. I would be surprised if we don't hear more, I would say probably in like the next week, just because of how the calendar works, where it's, if you're not moving that, or if you're waiting that long to get it really moving, then especially Arkansas, their situation right now where they're going to need a lot of portal help, that you might be in real trouble if you don't get to moving early.
You know, there are the names that are out there. Molly Miller has been mentioned a lot. You know, I think Carly Thibault-Dedonis at Fairfield is a coach that a lot of people think is going to get a bigger job, whether it be this cycle or the next. There are others. You know, Karen Aston is an Arkansas native who is at UTSA now, used to be at Texas. You know, I think it was at Baylor under Kim Mulkey at one point in time, and I know her name's been mentioned. But with Juracek, his hires almost all the time have been hires that nobody – really ever saw coming. Think about Jordan Weber when she was hired for gymnastics. Think about what they just did for the general manager job, hiring someone to oversee the entire department where everyone else is hiring, you know, sport-specific GMs. And so it feels like he's always trying to think outside the box. Do you think this might be an outside-the-box hire?
That's the feeling that I get. I'm just as in the know as anybody else as who is their leading candidate right now. But I get the sense that it is going to be somebody that I'm like, well, that one wasn't even on my radar. I mean, did anybody see John Calipari becoming the coach of the Arkansas basketball team? I think Jordan Weber was pretty, you know, it attracted a lot of attention to the program, and it was not really probably where anybody was going with their thoughts on who it might be. You think about, I mean, even Sam Pittman, it was very not a conventional hire. Things aren't usually conventional with him. So I'm just ready for whatever, if that makes sense. I know that there's, like, you know, the hot names in the cycle right now, and it's just, I think that a lot of them would be good hires. It's just, does he have a another hire that, you know, has a little bit more faith in. You know, it's one of those deals where you think about the last men's basketball search, there were a lot of good candidates out there that were floating around. People wanted them at Arkansas. And then once the dust settles, I think nobody's really complaining too much because mm-hmm. you landed a Hall of Fame coach. I think that this is one of those that you might just wait it out and see who they hire and, you know, make a judgment after that. Because I know a lot of people are upset right now that it seems like Molly Miller, I mean, not completely ruling her out, but as of over last weekend, she was not their leading candidate. And I know that it's a lot of people, but it's just kind of waited out and see who is their leading candidate.
You know, women's basketball is different from men's basketball, and obviously, you know, support plays a lot of role into this, how successful the team is going to be. I will say this. You look at Juracek, nobody was unhappy about the Musselman hire, and it turned out pretty well. I don't think anybody was real unhappy about the Calipari hire. I think that's going to, you know, it's proving that that's going to, you know, that's going to turn out well. Juracek played college basketball. I think he knows the game a little bit. I'm interested to see what he ends up doing here with the women's program. One more thing for you, Ethan, before you jumped on your big old jet airliner this morning. You covered Pro Day yesterday over at the indoor facility here on campus, football Pro Day for the Razorbacks. Landon Jackson obviously was kind of the star of the show. You know, there's some thought that he'll probably be a day two draft pick in the NFL draft next month. What did you see over there? Were there any other, you know, things that stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, the Pro Day is really, I get the sense just from, that was my first one to go to. It's really a day for those guys that don't get invited to the combine. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, these, you think of Jade Johnson, Danico Slaughter, some of these guys that, you know, they got to play a lot. But they obviously weren't going to get invited to the combine. I felt like more of a day for them to stand out. You know, you start off with them repping the bench press, and then they go and do the high jump, then do the broad jump, and just go through all the things. And you're kind of just getting the sense that, yeah, it's just an opportunity for those guys to get some, you know, numbers out there. And everything's unofficial at these because it's not, you know, you don't have all the timing and official stuff that they normally have in the NFL combine. Mm-hmm. But those guys that did go to the combine, they all five of them showed up and they did a little bit of stuff. I mean, Isaac Tessa, all that he did was the receiver drills. So he was just catching passes from Taylen Green. But Andrew Armstrong, I mean, he ran the 40. He went through pretty much, I think, almost everything. He didn't do like bench press, and I don't think he did vertical. Landon Jackson didn't anticipate doing anything other than defensive line drills. And then he was like, I want to do the shuttle. And I think he did the three cone too and did pretty well. So, yeah, it was a lot of these guys that, you know, you talk about Elena Jackson, who, yeah, early draft pick, like first or second round, I think is kind of the thought right now. And, you know, for a guy like him, he's got most of his stuff already out there from the combine. And he said he's been training since December 9th. So this felt like for him, it felt like more of an opportunity of, I want to go back and just be around the guys one more time. That's the sense that I got, at least. I mean, all the current team was there. Coaches, I mean, it felt like a big, like, almost send-off, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. It was just kind of and it was cool seeing, like, him and Andrew Armstrong were kind of soaking it up. But we had the little, of course, interviews afterward, and they got the pop-up backdrop, and they're like, oh, last time getting to do this. Like, it was, like, it more felt like closure than anything that they were there. But, I mean, some guys like Jaquinnon Jackson, he went through, like, pretty much everything because I think he didn't have the combine that maybe he wanted. I think his ankle that was bothering him this season was still bothering him then, but it's like feeling a lot better now. It was just, it varied depending on the guy of why they were there, what they were doing. But Pro Day is definitely, it's not, you know, make or break for any of these guys, I don't think, but it is, it can help them. Like, I mean, Isaac Tesla at the combine, he did not hurt himself at all with how good he did there. So I'll be interested to see guys like him, like if just the performance that he's had at the combine and the Senior Bowl and stuff, if that can, you know, really help him out.
Well, it'll probably get him on a practice squad, if nothing else, get him one of those free agent contracts if he's not drafted. I think
I would think so too.
He's really helped himself here over the last two or three months. Ethan, good stuff. Be safe.
I will try.
All right, we'll see you. Ethan Westerman on his way to Providence for the NCAA tournament. Well, today you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. There you can read Ethan's recap of the Razorback Pro Day yesterday. We got stories pretty much on every sport in season right now. Busy time at our website. When we come back, Christina Long's going to join me here in studio. We'll talk Razorback baseball. But first, word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, committed, professional, versatile, and serving their community since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. The very sleepy Christina Long joins me here in studio. You awake?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right.
That's I don't know why I'm so tired. There's like no reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, I was up late.
Really?
I went down this rabbit hole last night. Mm-hmm. And when I go down rabbit holes, I mean, I go.
I believe that, yeah.
I was on some sort of social media app. I don't know which one. And I saw this video, and it had this clip of Bob Kingsley, and I don't expect you to know who that is.
I'm glad.
But Bob Kingsley used to host the American Country Countdown. Do you like you may not, this may be before you were old enough to remember, like, do you remember countdown shows?
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
You do remember those?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, what did you listen to?
It was like, we were doing like top 40.
Rick D's and the weekly top 40?
I don't even know what that is, but I don't know who that is.
That was popular,
but
too,
it was basically like it was top 40, like pop music, yeah. Radio station stuff.
Well, Bob Kingsley, he hosted one of the country music deals. And so I heard that and I was like, man, that's kind of cool. So I just like, I wonder if you can listen to any of the old ones online. And I found one.
Oh, really?
From like 1991.
That's kind of cool.
And so Ashley was sitting there. She was enrolling our middle child in kindergarten. And that takes a long time. Anyway, I'm just sitting there listening to that. I got all my work done. And I don't know. It was just really neat listening to that. It's kind of like.
That is cool that you can find that there's a.
And the commercials.
Oh, did they bring back memories?
Well, it was more like a sign of the times. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like there was a commercial about long distance calls.
Mm-hmm.
There was a commercial for Spearmint Gum for Wrigley Spearmint Gum. And the commercial, I can't remember exactly, but it was like, do you want to be seated in the smoking section or the non-smoking section? Yeah, you know, this is 1991.
So funny,
this
yeah.
is a different. I tell my son all the time, it's like when you go into a restaurant, that would be the first question they would ask you. Do you want to sit in the smoking section?
Yeah.
Or do you want to sit in the non-smoking section? And none of my family smoked. And so I was always, but then you would walk by the smoking section, uh-huh. Like there was this cloud in there.
Yep.
And I mean, it just,
so funny.
And sometimes, and I think like, there's this one restaurant that I remember that we went to a lot, and they actually had a door that would close around the smoking section. And mm-hmm. So it would, you know, everybody's just inhaling everyone else's smoke.
Great.
But yeah, then it was frustrating. It's like, okay, I'm, you know, I'm in 1991, and then YouTube would come up with like a little 15-second ad that would snap you back into reality.
That's so funny.
But
yeah, that's
cool
that you can still find it.
Bob Kingsley has like the greatest voice of any radio person I've
ever
heard.
I'll have to look at it.
It's like the gold standard. If you could have a radio voice, that is the voice you would want to have.
That's really funny. Oh, I'll have to look at it. Yeah, I remember doing like top 40 countdown stuff. Like, we were usually, you know, when we were growing up, it was my mom was a big, she had a lot of CDs. My dad's not really into music. My mom is a little bit more so. And so, yeah, she had a lot of CDs. So we listened to some radio, but it was a lot of CDs that she had. And she was into, you know, she was into like Sting and the Police and like U2 and like that kind of vibe. So like, I grew up with a lot of that kind of thing.
Did she burn her own CDs?
She did not, but I did.
Okay.
I was
like,
really
you did it for her
that.
Or you did it for yourself?
Both.
Okay.
I was, so she owned a lot that she had bought, you know, and owned forever. And then, yeah, I always like, you know, I'd have birthday parties and like my party favors would be mm-hmm. like a CD for everybody. And like, I loved doing that.
Like, my truck now doesn't even have a CD player.
Yeah, mine either.
But I can't remember if it was a car ago or two cars ago. Obviously it had a CD player and I had one of those black cases of CDs.
Oh yeah.
And I left it in the car when I sold it.
Oh, no.
So I never got it back.
Oh, my gosh.
Not that I need it now, yeah. But it just at the time, it's like, oh, man, I lost.
Yeah. That's such a bummer.
Yeah. So, you know, talk about Razorbacks, I guess.
Sure, sure.
Arkansas baseball going to play tonight at Baumwalker Stadium. It's going to be a 6 o'clock first pitch against ORU. Golden Eagles 12-6 overall. Arkansas 18-2. Kind of interesting. It's third straight year that Arkansas has won 18 of its first 20 games. I didn't realize that until I started looking into some numbers yesterday. I talked to Ryan Folmar yesterday, the ORU coach. This is a young team. It's a team that hasn't played together a lot. A lot of freshmen. They're going to throw two freshman right-handers during the series this weekend. And, 22 players in their first year with the program. So ORU, they won 50-something games 2 years ago, went to the College World Series. This is not necessarily that type of team.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, this. I had remembered them doing pretty well in recent history, and it feels like Arkansas has played them a lot. In your notebook on wholehogsports.com, you've got that this will be a number 107 tonight between these teams, which is, I feel like I was thinking about this last night. I was like, I feel like they've played them a lot, but I didn't know if it was like my recency bias. Like, I remember them playing them a lot in the last few years. But yeah, they really have kind of a long series history together.
And they haven't played in Tulsa since 2011. Everything recently has been in Fayetteville or at a regional. They played at the Oklahoma State Regional in 15. They played here in Fayetteville at Regionals in 17 and 18. But everything else has been in Fayetteville. It's been kind of infrequent. But Tulsa in 2011, that was the last time Arkansas went over there. Kind of a fun little side story. That was the night that I set up Bob Holt's Twitter account.
He goes,
I've been hearing about this thing called Twitter. I was like, yeah. And so I was like, you want to get one set up? Yeah, you know how to do that? Like, yeah, I know how to do it. And so I set up Bob Holt's Twitter account.
That's so funny. I first got
And he
Twitter.
Never changed his bio.
Really?
It was the same bio that we put in there.
Oh,
that
yeah,
night
and it was like in the third person, right? It was like Bob Holt has covered the Razorbacks for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette for however many years. That's so funny. Yeah, I first got Twitter. My dad had made Twitter, and I was like 8. And he was like, I think I was like 8 or 10. And he was like, you girls need to make a Twitter so you can follow me. Like, he wanted us as followers. And I'm like, that like altered my, like, you had no idea then that you like altered my brain chemistry by putting me on Twitter at the age of like, I think I was between, I might have been 10. I think I might have been 10. I don't think I was quite 8. Yeah. Yeah. It was wild.
Man. Yeah. So Arkansas ORU, they played a number of times. I wrote something this morning about Arkansas's offensive numbers, or last night I wrote it, and it's on our site this morning, but about their offensive numbers since they came back from Texas, and they've been really good. And I knew they'd been pretty good. I don't know that I realized that they'd been as good as they have. Like, you know, they've raised their OPS by 145 points. They've raised their batting average by 49 points. Their slugging is way up. On base is up. Runs per game is way up since they came back from Dallas. And over the last 13 games, beginning with that Grambling game on February 25th, and granted, you know, not all the competition has been good, but then they also had success against Ole Miss. You know, like 12 innings in 13 games where they've scored 4 more runs. They've had 2 6-run innings. They've had an 8-run inning. They've had a 10-run inning. They've had multiple 5-run innings. I mean, this lineup, and we'll see if they can keep it up, but the lineup just feels as deep and unforgiving as a lineup that I can remember. You get down to the bottom, and it's going to be this way with every team. There's a hole at the bottom of the lineup. But the first 6 and on some days 7 batters, I mean, it's just where is there space to breathe against Arkansas?
Right. It's interesting because I feel like going into the season, we were – I don't know that we were worried about the pitching, but I feel like – We were more worried about the offense, I think. You know, just after last year and some of the disappointment of last year, we were a lot more concerned about the offense than we were about the pitching, and it's kind of turned out to be the reverse in some cases. Now, I don't think either has been, you know, the lineup hasn't been perfect, like you've said. There's a hole in it, but that's kind of always going to happen. You know, there's some games where they don't get it going, but that's also just going to happen. But I think, you know, and the pitching staff isn't, you know, a big problem, but I think the greater cause for concern has been, especially coming out of that first SEC weekend, has been the pitching staff, which is not what we expected to be, you know, saying at this point.
And we'll see. You know, I mean, it's one of those, Bubba and I talked about this yesterday, is one weekend doesn't make a trend.
It does not, yeah.
And starting pitching, Gackle's been shaky for most of the year, ever since the first outing, but the other two have been pretty consistent. And so I don't think it's time to panic about starting pitching yet. I do wonder, though, you know, the toll that last weekend put on the bullpen, You got South Carolina coming in here this week, and you got two midweek games. I wonder what pitching is going to look like on Tuesday and Wednesday. There's some guys who didn't throw over the weekend, you know, some who didn't travel, who I'm sure are going to pitch in this series. But they're stretched a little bit thin in the bullpen right now, you know, more so than they usually are in the midweek.
Right, and more so than I would have guessed that they would be. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's not time to panic. I mean, it's something that Dave talked about at Swatters Club early in the year, where it was like, we don't want to be playing our best baseball right now. Like, it is normal and okay for there to be things that we need to fix and problems we need to solve. And, you know, especially starting SEC play, and you've got a lot of new guys. Like, that's just kind of what we – that's kind of to be expected here early in the season. And as long as they can show progress over the course of the season, then, yeah, that's what you want.
So kind of unique in this game tonight, and I didn't realize this really until I was talking to the ORU coach. And as I'm talking to him, I'm looking at their stats, and, you know, I see a name. I'm like, that looks like a Polynesian-type name. And I click on it. Well, he's from Hawaii. And then I click on the next guy, and he's from Hawaii. Their top two hitters are from Hawaii. And Arkansas, you could argue their top two hitters. If you look at batting average, it's two of their top three, obviously, are the Aloy brothers. You got Nolan Souza from Hawaii. I mean, this is really interesting tonight that you've got five players who are all starters. Four of them are major, you know, hitting contributors. And then Souza's probably Arkansas's best defender, or one of them. Five Hawaiians playing in the same midweek game in Fayetteville, Arkansas, between a couple of teams from Arkansas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I am so interested in tracking kind of the Hawaiian baseball situation. You know, I wrote about it last year for our baseball season preview, and I talked to Rick Nomura, and, mm-hmm. you know, I love Rick. He was one of my favorite players on the Razorback teams that really got me into baseball. And so it was really fun. You know, I called him because he had, you know, coached Nolan in travel ball. Nolan played for his family's travel ball team. And so I called him to just kind of talk about, you know, having a kid from Hawaii here and talk about Nolan and, you know, talked about Vahiva as well, who he knew but not as well. Mm-hmm. And it was just so interesting to hear about how difficult it is for players from Hawaii to make it to, you know, the SEC,
mm-hmm.
and how hard it is for them to get recruited. And Rick was saying, you know, when he was at Arkansas,
and it's about the distance and it's about the cost.
Yes,
it's expensive for them to get to the mainland, yep. and it's expensive for the coaches to get out to mm-hmm. Hawaii. I talked to Nate Thompson. He goes, yeah, I'd love to take a trip out to Hawaii and recruit, but that's just not really in the recruiting budget.
Exactly. And then, yeah, for the families to go to camps, go to things like that, like that mm-hmm. costs a lot of money for them to do and a lot of time. And so that was, you know, and Rick was saying when he came to Arkansas, it was super unusual. And we've seen some more Hawaiian play, you know, some different SEC teams have had some players from Hawaii. And but Rick was saying, you know, when I came to Arkansas, most guys did not make it that far in the country, you know, that far east. A mm-hmm. lot of guys, he was like, the furthest we were going from home was like Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really interesting to kind of hear how it had changed from his time at Arkansas to now, and, you know, how it is so hard. You know, Vahiva Aloy, I talked to his dad, his and Kahio's dad, and he did some camps. You know, he went to a camp at Stanford, which was where the Sacramento State coaches noticed him. And with Kahio, though, he wasn't getting invited to as many camps. It was a little bit different, and they were doing a lot of, you know, a lot of what they had to do was posting clips on social media, posting clips on YouTube, trying to get him noticed that way.
Hmm.
You know, trying to get somebody to kind of see him and you know, sending video out. And so it's interesting to hear how these families have to manage this and how they try to get their kids noticed. And that's one of the things that Rick's travel ball team does, the Hawaii Tigers. They fundraise and they basically bring their team to, I think, one or two tournaments a year in the mainland, and they try to get, you know, their kids some exposure at the high school level. So it's really interesting that there's this many players on these two teams. And yeah, like you said, Oklahoma and Arkansas, it's pretty rare.
I think, does this Judah Ota, does he play for Nomura's team? I think he might.
I don't know.
He's from Honolulu. That's the reason I asked.
I don't think he does.
Okay. Well, I was talking to Fulmar. I said, you know, Nomura helped him identify Souza. He goes, he needs to keep helping them identify mm-hmm. players, because, you know, they're having such a great run of players from out in Hawaii. The two players for ORU tonight, by the way, I hope I'm not butchering a name. This is based on what the coach told me. Valele Kanayates, he's a catcher infielder. He's batting .367, five doubles, five homers, 18 RBI for ORU. And then they've got an outfielder named Makani Tanaka, who is from Honolulu. He and Souza's teams actually played against each other in high school. He comes into this game batting .342, three doubles, a triple, a home run, and 13 RBI. So just kind of fascinating tonight that you've got all of these Hawaiians that are potentially going to be starting this game over at Bomb.
And I misspoke. Judota does play for
Rick's team. I thought he did.
You're right. I was thinking of the ORU guys, not the incoming
I was
freshman.
Reading something where, and I'm sure it's not all the players who do this, but where players on the other islands will fly into Honolulu on Sunday and like the best
Vahiva
Hawaiians will play each other.
Vahiva did that. That's kind of how Rick knew him and how, you know, Vahiva and Nolan had met. So Vahiva, he was on a travel ball team that, came from another island, and they would play these, I can't remember what he called them, but they would play these.
It's like Sunday night in Honolulu.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they would play these, and Nolan and Vahiva played in them. And so they knew each other a little bit, even though, you know, they don't play each other during the high school season or anything because they're on different islands. But yeah, they would fly in and play that. And, you know, Rick was saying it's a really fun event that a lot of the community comes out to.
Hopefully they've got like frequent flyer miles. When we went on a honeymoon to Maui, but we wanted to go to Oahu to see Pearl Harbor and some other things on the island. It was like $250 just to go.
How long is the duration?
And that was a long time ago. 25, 30
okay.
minutes.
Yeah, because I was like, I have no concept of how
sure
far apart the islands are.
You know,
they
sure
don't look far on a map. But
you know, I mean, and that's from Maui to Oahu.
Right.
And I don't even know, you know, from the others. Maybe
yeah, like the last one to the first
right.
one.
I couldn't tell you which one was Oahu, which one was Maui.
I don't remember either.
I just knew I was way away from home whenever I was out there. I mean, to me, it's kind of fascinating. Ben Bybee is going to start tonight for Arkansas, the junior right-hander. He looked really good against Ole Miss the other day. Didn't allow a run, didn't allow a hit. He had a walk, struck out a couple. And that was on that night where Ole Miss was putting everybody on base for several innings until he came into the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said earlier about what they're going to do pitching-wise in these two games will be something to track just with the arms they want to use. And yeah, Bybee, I think, gives them a good option in the midweek, and it was good to see him, you know, pitch the way he did at Ole Miss. And I think I'm more interested what they do with the bullpen situation, you know, in this game and tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
They need Bybee to give them some length,
I
feel like.
Yes, definitely.
Where they don't have to use so many of those arms. Will Edmondson, who played for Arkansas last season, he's at ORU. Batting .306, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 7 RBI. He started all 18 games for them, hit a 3-run homer last weekend in one of their games against North Dakota State over in Tulsa. ORU's 12-6 coming into this game. Also, Justin Thomas. A lot of people have been asking about him since Sunday. I checked in on him yesterday. Told he's doing well,
good.
That he worked out, and that he hit at Arkansas's facility yesterday. So it seems like that shoulder is fine. Bubba was talking yesterday about the angle that he hit the wall is something that kind of concerned him.
Yeah, and I had seen some stuff on social media from people who were at the game that said it was like, they said you can't really tell on TV, you know, you can tell he hits the wall hard, but they're like, you don't really realize how hard, like we heard it. Like somebody said it sounded like a car crash. So, you know, it's something like that where you see it on TV and it goes, oh, that hurts, but you don't really necessarily realize how much it might hurt.
So, I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to seeing if Arkansas can keep the hitting going.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think against a couple of freshman pitchers who have thrown a combined 7 innings.
Yeah.
And neither of their numbers are, one of their numbers is not very good. The other one, I don't think he's pitched enough really to have numbers yet. But can they keep the hitting going into this game, and can they stay hot going into South Carolina this weekend?
Yeah, I would think so, you know, in these two games. I think the big test will be South Carolina at home, and, you know, if they can do enough in these couple of games to like you said, kind of keep it rolling. And, you know, South Carolina, we were talking, I mentioned last week that I felt like Ole Miss was a pretty good way to start your conference series because there's not that many, you know, easy games. And South Carolina's not easy, but, you know, they're one of the few SEC teams that's not ranked, you know.
It's so, one of the winnable SEC
series.
Yes,
exactly. So that's a good, you know, way to open at home, especially after, you know, a pretty tough series at Ole Miss.
Arkansas's got and A&M's not playing as well, so I don't know that the A&M series, but I'm not going to sit here and say A&M's not any good either, because they're kind of like KU basketball. They got the talent. When are they going to turn it on? You know what I mean? But you know, they've got this stretch here over the next couple 3 weeks where you feel like they need to be able to stack some wins. South Carolina this week at home, they go to Vanderbilt next week. Vanderbilt's good. I don't think they're the Vanderbilt, maybe the standard of Vanderbilt that a lot of people are accustomed to. And then Missouri comes in here. And then you got that stretch where you go at Georgia, A&M here. You go to Florida. And then
Texas
is here. And then you go to LSU and Tennessee, the top two teams in the country. Tennessee's here, but the top two teams in the country to end the season. They got to stack some wins here in the next couple of weeks to give themselves some breathing room whenever they get to the end. And you know they're not going to sweep every series, and they may not win, you know, the series.
Right. And we said earlier, you want to be playing your best baseball at the end of the season, and they're going to have to be if they're going to, you know, keep up with some of these teams down the stretch because of what a gauntlet it is there at the end of the season.
It's a gauntlet. It's like, it feels like every day is baseball right now. I mean, there's 5 days this week. There's 4 days next week. It's when Van Horn spoke at the Swatters Club at the beginning of March, he said, before I come back here at the beginning of April, we're going to play 22 games in the span of probably 33, 34 days. I mean, it's
this is
where you find out a lot about your team and just how they can handle that daily grind. So Arkansas and ORU tonight, 6 o'clock at Baum Walker Stadium. They're going to play tomorrow afternoon as well at 3 o'clock. You can read all about the series at our website, wholehogsports.com. When we come back, we're going to talk to Christina about what happened with NCAA track over the weekend. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to talk Razorback track now. The men finished fourth over the weekend at the NCAA track meet in Virginia Beach, and it was a controversial ending. I'm watching baseball, and Christina texts me. She goes, are you seeing what's happening here with track? It's crazy. And it was probably one of the most unique finishes ever to a championship track meet. Basically, what happens is that Arkansas had – did they have the best mile relay time, the best 4x4 time in the country?
I believe they did.
I think they did, too. So they've got the best time in the final event of the championship, and they're down by 4 points to Southern Cal going into the 4x4, down by 2 points to Auburn, but Auburn's not running
Auburn wasn't in the race,
event.
Yeah.
So if Arkansas wins this, they get 10 points.
Texas A&M had the best.
A&M had the best time. Arkansas had the second best time.
Third
best time.
Florida.
Okay. Regardless,
just for accuracy,
they're competitive times.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking tenths of seconds,
yes,
right?
Between, exactly. Yeah.
So they think that they've got a chance to win the relay. Whether or not they would have done it, we don't know. A&M has a runner who runs into Arkansas's first leg of the relay, mm-hmm. knocks him off the track. He drops the baton, and then Arkansas just jogs it out the rest of the way, and they're about to get lapped, and it confuses the judges who I guess, or the officials who I guess think that Arkansas is in the lead,
yep,
and just so far ahead of everybody else. And so they're like holding the other team's anchor legs off of the track. And I guess one of them runs around.
The Texas A&M guy was like, I'm going.
And so he like runs around the judge. It's chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos ensues here at the end of this. I'm sure it affects the times for those three teams that were still running. Now, A&M ultimately was disqualified because of running Arkansas off the track. So it ends. Chris Bucknum, the Arkansas coach, asks for he protests, and he asks for a rerun. They want to run the 4x4 by themselves with nobody else on the track. And it's like an hour-long review process. An official comes up to Bucknum. The on-site official says, I'm not the one who can make this call. The NCAA office has to make this call. And so then everybody gathers in a room upstairs at this Virginia Beach facility. And I guess that they're having a conversation with people back in Indianapolis. And ultimately, Bucknum gets a phone call that says, you know, your request has been denied, basically. And I think if you're a good lip reader, you can see that he had a choice word or two whenever he got that told to him. And then the ESPN cameras filmed him talking to his team. I'd be curious, did you ask him if he knew if the audio was on when the cameras were on?
I didn't ask.
Because I wonder if he just thought that they're just filming him. Mm. But they're filming him, and they're also getting the audio of what he's telling his team. And I know that there were some people who were upset that, you know, he was too kind of passive, talking to his team, telling them, hey, you know, we're going to accept the official's decision. We're going to go get our fourth place trophy. We're going to tell Southern Cal congratulations, and we're going to go home and get ready for the outdoors. Take it from there. You had a long conversation with him yesterday. Still pretty upset about how everything went down.
Absolutely. I mean, this was a crazy situation. And, you know, basically Arkansas was in
potentially
position.
Cost him a national championship.
Yes, it did. Because what happened with the baton exchange, with the officials messing it up, basically, so if you don't know anything about track, the third heat is usually the final, or the final, not third, the last heat is usually the fastest. Everybody mm-hmm. with the best times.
And it was the third heat.
This is the third heat. This is the final heat. So these are all the fast teams. Southern Cal, who's leading the team score in the meet, is in it. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M, Florida, and Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Arkansas could have won the national title, could have won the meet if they finished basically two places better. So it was kind of a situation where if USC got fourth and Arkansas won, they would have jumped, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. USC did get fourth because of what happened with the exchange issue. So they did get fourth. So nobody in the fast heat at the end placed top three. Everybody that placed top three in this race was from the second heat.
And just to interject, Arkansas could have won the national championship had they won it, or they could have tied USC for the national championship had they finished second.
So it basically cost them a solid shot at a national title because the idea was, okay, so there were multiple things that happened. So Texas A&M runs Stephen McElroy, Arkansas's first leg guy, off the track. Mm-hmm. Bucknum told me that they were pretty sure they protested. So that's kind of like throwing your challenge flag, basically, mm-hmm. And said, you know, go back and look at, you know, this push and see if it was, you basically evaluate if it was intentional, if it was flagrant. And Bucknum told me that they were pretty sure that Texas A&M was going to be disqualified anyway, that the officials had already at the time and like during the race had already sort of decided. They protested anyway. Texas A&M was disqualified. It was ruled flagrant and intentional. So that was why Bucknum asked for the rerun, was because he said, if that was something, you know, if you agree that our runner was intentionally pushed off the track, was flagrantly impeded is the term, then how is it fair for us to, you know, basically not have this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And one thing he explained to me that I didn't know was he said sometimes, you know, especially it happens a lot in distance races, especially there's a lot of jostling for position. There's some contact made. And when somebody, he gave the example of, okay, let's say this was the mile prelims. So if somebody runs a guy off the track or somebody gets pushed off the track and it's ruled, you know, that they were flagrantly impeded, that it was intentional, what they do is they disqualify the offending runner, and the runner who was impeded, they usually would advance them to the final. That's kind of typically what happens. And so Bucknum said he kind of tried to make the case that, you know, this is a different situation because this is the final mm-hmm. of a relay that can determine the national championship.
Of a championship meet.
Yes. And so it is a different situation, but he was kind of trying to make the case that, you know, since you can't just advance a guy, you know, since you don't have that option, that's not the case, why can't we, you know, we should be able to rerun.
Mm-hmm.
And actually get it, especially because the push happened on the first lap of an 8-lap race.
Mm-hmm.
So they really didn't even have an opportunity to run it. And so that was his argument. And he said, you know, there was the hour-long review. He said, you know, the officials are kind of in a bind because this isn't without much precedent. This is not something that happens often. This isn't mm-hmm. something that happens often in the situation that it happened in here. And they basically said, you know, we can't come up with a conclusion, so the meet's over. You know, mm-hmm. like, there's no good solution. There's just not a lot that they can do. He said, I don't think the officials could really wrap their head around us rerunning the race, was what he kind of kept telling me that they couldn't wrap their head around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just kind of, they couldn't.
They're scared to set precedent.
Right. And other,
could
and, you
be
know,
challenged later on.
And, you know, they have Bucknum in there saying, let us rerun it. They have every other coach saying, don't let them rerun
it. And all of this is playing out on the broadcast. And you could see, I think, the Florida coach,
Florida,
the Southern,
Mississippi State,
somebody else. Arizona State, maybe?
Yeah, Arizona State was down there.
And so they're all talking to the officials. And I'm not sure, but what I would guess they're saying is, why are you going to give them a chance to rerun the race?
Yeah.
There's no
because
precedent
so
for this.
Georgia won the relay. They were in that second heat. They won the relay title based on everything that happened, and that actually those 10 points actually vaulted them into second place. So then Auburn got pushed to third, and Arkansas got pushed to fourth.
10 points at a championship meet like this, Or I mean, they're it's like gold.
I mean, what total won? Like 50 something?
If that.
No, not even 50 something. Cal won, Southern Cal won by like 30 something.
Yeah.
Almost 40.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a huge chunk. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that is why Arkansas was in position to, yeah, maybe be runner-up, which they always want to win. They wouldn't have been happy with runner-up necessarily. But they get pushed back to fourth because mm-hmm. of this. And so that was kind of the situation. It was so crazy. I mean, this was an hour long. And when you're watching, the track broadcasts are kind of odd. They have commentary, but it's, you know, it's ESPN Plus, so it's mm-hmm. not, they're not filling TV time. If it had been on actual TV, we wouldn't have seen any of this because they would have just ended it when it ended because they mm-hmm. have other things to get right. to. But the ESPN Plus, I mean, the stream just runs. And the commentators come in, they came in maybe twice over the course of this hour to kind of try to give an update or explain what was happening. But for the mm-hmm. most part, it is like dead air. Like it is silence. Mm-hmm. It is the room noise, which is where you can hear Bucknam's speech.
I give them credit for keeping the cameras on.
Me too.
You're like on Arkansas because you could see Bucknam. You could see Doug Case, Matt Downs, who's mm-hmm. the director of track operations. I mean, they were all working the phones, mm-hmm. talking to people who were coming over, I don't know that they could have done anything else to appeal this yeah. any harder. The only thing I can think of that they could have done is like Shooter McGavin and run up on the stage and steal the trophy and run away with it. Hey, Patrick Kiprop, go get it. Yep. Nobody's going to catch you. You know,
it was crazy. And you could see the director of ops go to, you know, he calls the coaches, you know, he's kind of talking to the officials. Mm-hmm. He kind of brings them over and he says, okay, here's the situation. We can ask to rerun it. And Doug Case, I think his words were basically, yeah, we'll rerun it. We don't care. Mm-hmm. Like we'll do it right now. You know,
And the whole time that this is going on, Arkansas's strength and conditioning coach has got the four runners out
they're
in the middle of the track,
staying warm, yeah,
trying to get them warmed up and, mm-hmm. and ready to run it again.
Yeah, so it was especially because I kept thinking I was like, okay,
drama.
It was crazy, like drama I would not expect to see in track. And track is a very exciting sport.
It is,
and this was crazy. And so yeah, I talked to Bucknam yesterday about it. He's obviously they're really disappointed. You know, he also made sure to point out, he was like, I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses. He was like, we didn't have to be in this position. There mm-hmm. were other places we could have scored mm-hmm. points. They got some results they were not expecting.
Right.
They failed to get points or did not get as many points in some events that they really were positioned well to score big in. You know, the high jump, the distance events, they just didn't get what they needed. So it was not just this. And he knows that and made sure to say that. And, you know, they're going into outdoor now. And he kind of went on this extended, I really like talking to Chris Buckner. He's mm-hmm. he's great to talk to.
Oh, he gets animated.
Yes,
and he was Boston very accent.
Yes,
and, yeah.
And he had this extended metaphor about how they're looking at outdoor now. And he said, we just had a midterm exam with the indoor meet and the indoor season, and we got an A-. And he said, most people would be cool with an A-. Most people would say I'm good. We're trying to go from an A- to an A. And then he kind of went on this whole metaphor about we've got to talk to our guys now about, hey, you've got to do this extra reading. If you go read this book, you'll know more about the topic. You know, he uses this whole classroom metaphor, and he basically said, we're not satisfied with the A-. Like, we've got to get an A in outdoor. And that's what they're turning their attention to. You know, the women's team also finished fourth. They had a really rough first day where they didn't qualify as many people as they needed to basically have a good shot at the title. And they actually ended up, it was pretty unlikely that they would get where they did, and finish fourth. And so Coach Johnson, when I talked to him, he was quite proud of their effort given how they came out and started and how it would have been very easy for them to kind of give up. And so he was actually feeling pretty good. You know, they're not happy with fourth. They wanted to win. They'd won. They were going for a three-peat.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said he thinks that they can learn a lot from this.
They got an A- because the dog ate their homework. And the dog in this case, as it usually is the NCAA.
Yeah.
We're talking about football and the rule changes the other day and how the rule changes in football are always a reaction to
yes.
these high profile, how Oregon, Ohio State ended in the regular season or Brett Bielema's little spat with Beamer
oh,
at
yeah.
the bowl game or whatever the case might be. Georgia and all their overtimes and their timeout, all their timeouts and overtimes against Georgia Tech. I'd be interested to see if track, now that they've had this high profile incident, at least within their sport, I don't know how many other, unfortunately, and the Arkansas coaches have made this complaint that track just does not get covered a
right.
whole lot. We do our best
yeah.
To cover them, and I think we do a good job of it. But, it's not making the front page of the newspaper. It's not, it's not on the national – it's not making ESPN's, Sports Center or anything
unless
like
that. Unless it's the Olympics, yeah.
Right. And so But this is a high profile event within that community. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be interested to see if maybe they get some rule changes because of this.
Yeah. We're kind of a couple of track heads. We both really love covering
track. I love it.
I've been learning, you know, I'm
always disappointed at indoor season because I go over there and I cover about the first month of
and then baseball
indoor
hits.
And then baseball starts and
I've been enjoying learning about it a lot. You know, I feel like I learn something new every time I watch it, and it is truly very exciting. I really, you know, I was really looking forward to, you know, watching. I was covering them remotely. They were in Virginia, but I was really looking forward to just sitting and watching these all day. You know, even when Arkansas doesn't have anybody in it, it's really fun. So I've been really enjoying covering track, and I think outdoor will be exciting. I've actually never covered an outdoor meet. I don't know if I've been to one here, so I'm looking forward to that.
Been to the NCAA back when they let the NCAA outdoor meet be held somewhere other than Oregon.
Yeah.
Now they've got a stranglehold on it and you can't get it out of there anymore. So you can read more about the Razorback track teams at our website, wholehogsports.com. You can read all of our coverage there, baseball, basketball, football, what have you. There's a lot of sports that are in season right now, and well, football's in spring season, but you know what we mean. And we've got coverage there at our website. Hope we see you there, or we hope we see you on our podcast tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.